item K, we're back in session. We have presenting, we welcome Justice Richard Huffman, Chair of the Advisory Committee on Financial Accountability and Efficiency for the Judicial Branch, Presiding Judge Lori Earl, Zlatko Theodorovich, AOC Fiscal Services Office, Kurt Soderlund, and Giselle Corey. Thank you.
Thank you, Chief. Let's go to the next slide. So budget change proposals, many of you know this terminology, but just in case it's new to
You're
some
not.
Of the members.
Can you do a little louder? Thank you.
Is that better?
No.
Speak
a little louder.
Speak into it.
Is that better?
Yes.
That's a bad back.
Okay, budget change proposals are the vehicle that the state of California uses to present requests for additional funding or adjustments in funding. BCPs can actually be negative too, but for future fiscal years to address issues such as cost increases for existing programs, workload growth for existing programs, new policies and programs. As Michael Cohen indicated yesterday, the development of budget change proposals is something that is currently underway, and we will submit our budget change proposals for the branch by September 13th, 2013 of this year. Michael also mentioned what's noted there on the second bullet, the Department of Finance budget policy letter that they issue each year on a statewide basis, and that's the issue again that we're going to go forward with the assumption that these are priority needs for the branch. In addition to the submittal for September, there are actually four other vehicles where budgets can be augmented. One is called the finance letter process, and that occurs in February. There's the May revise process. For the finance letter process and for the BCP submissions on September 13th, to the extent that we have any placeholders, we'll have to give notice to the Department of Finance at that point in time. If we don't do that, they'll deny our future requests. And then there's new legislation that can act as a vehicle for budget augmentations also. For background, the approval is needed by the council that's required prior to submission of any budget change proposals for the entire branch. The budget development process includes a review of all the financial, workload, and technical needs of the branch. And approved funding requests will be necessary to establish the parameters and frame discussions in the fall with the governor and the Department of Finance going forward. This is in line with what the budget letter had indicated, but that the proposed BCP should be limited and focused in light of the state's current economic situation. For the branch-wide proposals, one thing that we'll have to reconcile is whatever our overall ask is going to be less, whatever budget change proposals are put forward, so there's not, if you will, a double counting at all. And among the other issues that we'll be putting forward on a statewide basis are fund balance and then benefits for the entire branch. So I'm going to tag team with Zlatko, and he's going to take you through the Supreme Court and courts review requests.
Yes, good afternoon, Council and Chief. We are also presenting issues relative to the Supreme Court and the Courts of Appeal. There are two specific requests that have been developed thus far regarding a technical issue with the Third District's facilities. They were shorted some funding when their budget was created for their new building, and so we're trying to deal with that. There was an issue that the APJs are supportive of the in terms of appellate document management systems, but we do have this issue of overarching technology needs. This is a specific item that's been identified as a need for the courts of appeal. But again, we are looking at technology as a branch-wide issue, and they are engaged in the technology strategy planning process. Finally, there are some ongoing evaluations of workload needs, and particularly the 4th District is experiencing some workload backlogs, and so they're in the process of further refining the needs, but there are some, given the reductions that have occurred to the Courts of Appeal, they are looking at finding ways to deal with shortfalls in staffing and the workload that they need to address. Next are the trial court proposals. We did send out a – so in this year what we did was we tried to solicit information and feedback from the trial courts. And so what we did is we send out we sent out a survey to all the trial courts, PJs and CEOs, asking them to comment on some concepts that we as AOC staff had developed. And we also asked them to provide us their priorities in terms of what they felt should be pursued by the branch on behalf of the trial courts. And we will go through those next. So first was trial court reinvestment. Similar to the overall branch reinvestment concept, clearly a reinvestment in the trial courts. To what level, I think, is still being determined, but the concept is that we need to have a restoration, a reinvestment of resources into the trial courts, and that is a, sort of their paramount request. Next, and similar to what Kurt had mentioned previously, the need to fund health benefits and retiree benefit cost increases. You've heard some of the reports from the liaisons. San Diego, in particular, was talking about the fact that benefit cost increases have caused a significant strain on their budgets. We are trying to manage those within the trial court trust fund this year, but we believe that this is an appropriate cost for the general fund to bear. Just like the rest of state government in terms of its employee benefit and retirement costs. Third is technology. As you all know, we've talked about technology extensively today. And, again, that was a priority identified by the trial courts and supported by the trial court budget advisory committee.
Why does it say placeholder?
And the reason we have this placeholder concept is this, Judge Rosenberg, good question. To the best of our ability, we attempt to pinpoint the exact dollar amount and plan for any particular budget change proposal at the September submission. But there are items that we are not able to complete that analysis, but we want to put the Department of Finance on notice that we will be pursuing it for this budget process. And so what we're doing is we're going to be indicating a need for technology. We're working on it, and it will be submitted in its final form in that February process that Kurt had mentioned.
And we anticipate having this item go before the council in the month of December. And the linchpin issue here that goes to the ad hoc issue is the fact that both the California Department of Technology as well as the Department of Finance are looking for a business plan and a tactical plan and a strategic plan from us that will hopefully address the issue of not doing ad hoc things in the future but have a plan going forward that the Department of Finance, the legislature, and the technology agency can understand.
Any questions? It's just as well.
Thank you. On recommendation number two, this may perhaps be just a point of procedure, I'm not sure, but it had not been my understanding, has not been my understanding that BCPs that affect the appellate courts and the Supreme Court have traditionally gone through the AOC as opposed to those courts, those bodies making their own preparing their own BCPs and sending them forward. Does this represent a change in that?
No, we prepare the documentation working with the courts of appeal and then submit them as a package. So we package them up. We package all of the BCPs for the branch together. So it isn't as much us submitting it. They are all branch proposals.
Okay. So this really isn't any change in standard operating procedure.
Correct. So next is the second set of 50 judgeships from a funding standpoint. We're asking for funding for the already authorized but unfunded 50 judgeships. We also intend, and I believe this is correct, is to seek authorization for the third 50. Now, if you're not familiar with this concept of first, second, and third 50s, there was an agreement some years back of increasing the number of judgeships by 150, notwithstanding the fact that our judicial needs assessment identified needs greater than that, and so they were planned to be in three sets, 50 in each set, and the first 50 were approved and funded. Statute was passed for the second set, and because of the budget crisis, funding was included and then taken out of the budget and was never put back in the budget to fund the second 50. So we're asking to fund that second 50 of judgeships and requesting the statutory authorization for the third set of 50 to get to the total 150, hopefully having 100 of them funded through this budget.
Judge Jacobson.
I just have a question, and it may just be my lack of understanding, but if we're going through a period of time where we're not getting enough money from the governor and the legislature to sort of function at our base level, what's our strategy in asking for 50 new judgeships when it seems to me we're having trouble, we're going to have trouble next year meeting payroll? I don't understand the process thoroughly enough.
Judge Rosenberg has a tandem question or answer.
Well, in light of that, that's a really fair question, but I think the problem is we are like 300 judges or more short statewide. We really are way under what the workload would indicate, and these 50 have been created 5 years ago and have never been funded.
Right.
So even if that is funded, we're still behind the eight ball. So it seems to me, if you look at it incrementally, it's not inappropriate to at least get these 50 funded, and we'll still be behind the eight ball.
So, Judge McKay.
Please, go ahead.
I was going to respond to Judge Jacobson's question. Actually, I think Judge Rosenberg answered it, but the other part of that is that when we get funding for the 50 judgeships, it comes with additional funding for a component of support staff that comes with it. Because one of the discussions we had at our meeting is we can't afford the staff that comes with the judges until we had a conversation about how there's a component of staff that comes with it to support them. So it would not require us to find staff to support those new judges.
Chief, could I just ask a follow-up question to that answer?
Yes.
I yield.
Thank you. Does that mean then if they give us the funding for those 50 judgeships, are they going to take something else away from us that is of higher priority?
I don't think I can answer that.
Judge Hardcastle.
McCabe's first. Did you yield?
I'll yield again. It's your last.
I appreciate that. My question is as to the 50 judgeships. Is that going to be on the set of criteria and to those counties that were designated back then, or is the new work model going to play into who's going to get these 50 judgeships?
We had that discussion as well, and it would be based on the existing study of judgeship need and would not have anything to do with the current funding allocation model.
So would that be to the third set as well? Should we ever get to that stage?
We haven't got that far.
Yeah, we haven't got that far. One of the strategies behind doing this is that if we don't keep the issue warm, if you will, then that tends to have less attention, less play. So there's some politics behind doing this to put it in front of the administration and the governor, to be perfectly frank. And in terms of, you know, which approach to use in terms of caseload and workload, those kinds of things, that's an issue that may be coming back before the council.
Well, I doubt many of the legislators that are there currently were around when that legislation passed.
They weren't.
And certainly this governor wasn't in office.
Judge McCabe and then Commissioner Alexander.
Thank you, Commissioner Alexander and Chief. When I first arrived on the bench, our court had five judicial officers, and by formula we needed 20. So we were the only under 50%. At that time. So the Merced Court has greatly benefited from this package. If I recall correctly, Chief Ron Jord commissioned a survey done by a national group to come in, and there were approximately 355 judges needed at that time for the state. And because of the fiscal crisis, agreed to 150 of those, noting we still needed more. And then that would be done over a three-year period. SB 56, if I've got my numbers correctly, was the first around. And along with that were conversions from commissionerships to judgeships, of which I got two judges and two commissionerships converted. And so I'm now doubled to 10 because of that legislation. AB 159, if I got the number correct, is the second round, which I've got another batch of judges we're waiting for that haven't been funded. It's imperative at some point that these be funded. And two, it still doesn't resolve the principal problem is that the need grows. Yes, we've had fluctuations in the caseload, but that was 355 a number of years ago, I think 7 years ago. And I would bet that it's if not the same, it may be even greater today. And again, nothing's static. Everything is dynamic and moving. So if we don't ask for it now, when do we ask for it? And I don't ask for this on Merced's point of view. There are a number of folks that are in bad need. Inland Empire is severely hit. San Bernardino, Riverside, I don't know how those folks do the work. The caseloads are incredible. So I would support asking them. I recognize in the component that each of these judgeships comes with about $1 million plus tag because you're getting clerks and security, et cetera, and a reporter that all attach to each judge. So it's a funding package which each judicial officer. And I think now is the time as good of any is to start addressing the issue and create dialogue. If we're not successful, at least we put it on the table, begin talking seriously about filling it at some point in the future. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you. Commissioner Alexander and then Judge Kaufman.
I have two questions. One is about the judgeships. What about space? Mm-hmm. That's a facility issue.
I can answer that as well. The space comes with them.
Oh.
And as I've had that dialogue with the state, is in part of the formula, it requires that they fund space available as well. So that wouldn't be on the local. It would be coming with the package. So the $1 million price tag has probably gone up now because of the facilities issue. Sorry to take your job, but I had that info and I thought I'd give it to you.
You want to come sit over here?
Yeah.
Are you going to And
my other question was back up on the re-employee and retirement health benefits. Is that a separate fund again like it was previously? Didn't we get increases for benefits before that didn't have to come out of the
right. trial
court funding?
Right, they were funded from the general fund.
So when you say general fund, that's where it comes separately and we get those as they're mm-hmm. accrue.
That's what we would be asking for, yeah.
And just for a clarification on the additional judgeships, that's part of the analysis that's going on right now on the capital side in terms of looking at the allocation of where the judgeships would be located on a county-by-county basis and then looking at those facilities and trying to find out is there any capacity for those existing facilities or for new facilities to house these judges. So that's part of the analysis that's going on right now.
Judge Kaufman?
I think you just answered my question, but Judge McCabe, so if you got 10 judges right now, would you have the space to put them to house?
You betcha. Hey, I'll take a card table in the park if that's it takes. But I need the judgeships more than I do the space, and we'll find the space.
Okay, but on the other hand, if you couldn't find the space, then that would be part of the package too, right?
If it didn't come with the package, I would still find space. Okay. Just to let you know, when I first arrived there, my office, my chambers, was actually sitting in the back of somebody else's courtroom holding court in the chambers. And you know what? That's just what you had to do to get business done. And so I have no problem. Give us the bodies and we'll figure it from there. But the package includes facilities as well.
The last funded request had tens of millions of dollars for facilities and tenant improvements to house the additional judges. We'll continue.
Please do.
The issue on this, the bottom of this page, and the next two issues are related to courthouse operations, and I'd ask that we defer the specific discussion of those because they're covered as part of the AOC requests. But there was a recognition that we have not gotten funding needed to maintain and operate our facilities, and so these were three particular items that were included in the. In the list of priorities from the trial court's budget advisory committee. Next is this staff salary increases, and the reason that is a placeholder around it as well is that I'm sure many of you are aware that the executive branch has negotiated some increases for staff that will kick in potentially in the 14-15 fiscal year, but per the agreement must be funded in 15-16, and the reason that there's a difference because the potential increase in 14-15 is based on a determination made by Mr. Cohen at some point in the next fiscal year as to whether or not they can afford increases in 14-15. So given there's some uncertainty about the timing and if there's any other negotiations, we're seeking a similar compensation increases as envisioned by the executive branch for their staff. But since there's still some uncertainty, we're putting that onto the table to the Department of Finance. But that's an issue that we understand we should have addressed, similar to the negotiations that he's done.
And what's important about that is it's very clear that, from our information, as those agreements are made within the executive branch, the state agencies will get additional appropriations. So those additional costs are going to be funded. It's not going to be something that a particular state agency like Caltrans has to eat out of their hide.
So, Zlatko, are you referring to merit salary adjustments, or are you referring to COLAs? What are you referring to when you say staff salary increases?
Called, in the executive branch, they're called general salary increases, GSIs. MSAs are not part of the funding process for state agencies. Merit salary awards or adjustments are something that state agencies grant to staff as they move through a classification because they tend to have a step. And so those are not funded within the executive branch as in terms of additional cost as they are incurred. They must be managed within each department's budget. So we're talking about general salary increases, cost
which
of living increases.
Right, which is can be a COLA. And you're telling me that MSAs are not part of that. They're paid out of if the entity has the money in its budget to give the MSA, correct?
Yeah, exactly.
That's correct.
Thank you.
Finally, was court-appointed dependency counsel. This body approved $103 million in the July meeting, but I think at that time I mentioned that the actual costs of that program were approximately $137 million, and so we are underfunded for that particular line item, and we know that this is a very important issue, and this was recognized by the Budget Advisory Committee as something that should be pursued, so we're looking to breach that gap between the actual expenditure need and the budgeted level. There were a particular item that was discussed and has been discussed this morning relative to security that was not pursued and recommended to be pursued by the council from the Budget Advisory Committee. I think Judge Earl might have a few comments regarding the discussion on that issue.
So, as mentioned earlier today, there was there is this issue of the Sheriff's Department throughout the state finding themselves, as they say, underfunded in terms of court security funding. As you may recall, in 2011, with criminal realignment, the courts were taken out of the funding process for trial court security. It comes directly from the state to the counties. Most, if not all, of these increased costs are related to increased costs in benefits, wages and benefits to the individual sheriff's officers or departments. We did have a discussion about whether or not it would be appropriate for the judicial branch to seek a BCP to for augmented funding to court security. It was a healthy conversation, and when we sent out the survey, it was the closest in terms of yes, no, it was the closest vote. I think there was only a two or three point difference. There were 36 courts responding, and I think 18 of them said we should not be seeking BCP, but we should work with the Sheriff's and Deputy Sheriff's Association and the CSEC to support them in seeking it, and there were other courts, I think as many as 15, who said we should be seeking a BCP because it clearly impacts our ability, our safety in our courtrooms, our ability to do our job. We did recognize also that it would not be the increases in the sheriff costs would not be limited to this year. We will have this conversation every year, and we did not want to get enmeshed in that type of of discussion, and for those reasons, the Budget Advisory Committee voted. I think there was one no vote, but the other, there were two.
There were two no votes,
but the other members voted in agreement not to seek a BCP.
And just to put a fiscal sense on the survey, we did pursue a survey to get a sense of the dollar magnitude, and it's in the $25 million range, as reported by the sheriff. So it's not audited by us. We can't verify the numbers, which was a big concern. But just in terms of reported by sheriffs compared to what is anticipated to be provided through the realignment funding pot, it's a $25 million shortfall, which is substantial.
And I should also, there's one other thing that Zlatko reminded me of. One of the big concerns also among PJs and CEOs is there's no auditing responsibilities in this account. So although the government code section is very clear on how they can spend their money or have to spend their money, there's no oversight or monitoring of that. So the courts, when we send out surveys, we have no way of independently determining whether or not they have complied with the government code section, and thought this was another reason not to venture in the political arena on this.
Justice Hull.
Thank you. I'm on that point, a thought came to mind. I'm council liaison to Calaveras County, and I visited Calaveras earlier this year. I have yet to report on that visit. I intend to do that at the next meeting. But one of the problems they raised with me that they were facing is they're nearing completion of a new courthouse in Calaveras County that the community badly needs because it has more courtroom space and other space. They're having, though, the same type of difficulty where they're Calaveras County Sheriff isn't certain. Well, it's under negotiation, but there is an issue as to whether or not the sheriff can provide security for the new courthouse. And so you have the rather unsettling thought that you have a courthouse now that meets the community's needs and will continue to do so for many years to come, but you don't have sheriffs to provide the public the security they need in those courthouses. And I'm just leading up to saying if the decision, as I understand it, is that the branch is not going to pursue BCPs at this time, at least with regard to that funding, where are we if the sheriff's departments, for their own reasons, don't want to pursue them either?
You want to speak here?
So I know Kurt Child has been in negotiation with each of the there's actually three counties or courts that are going to be impacted, three facilities that will be opening up later on this year. It's a little bit of a mixed bag where I believe on one of them they think there's a chance to get by, if you will, but we don't right now have a long-term solution as to how to get the security staffing for those facilities. But it's still a work in progress in terms of our discussions with those three individual courts.
Well, I appreciate that, and I appreciate all the work you're doing on it, but do we just have a practical difficulty here where ultimately, as to any court either now or in the future, needing additional security funding, nobody is pursuing it. We choose not to, for good reasons, and the sheriff chooses not to. And so where does that leave us as a practical matter?
So previously on this issue, roughly five weeks ago, Kurt and I, Zlatko, Corey, Jody and I, we met with CSAC and with the Sheriff's Association, and we put this issue on the table. And they were very noncommittal one way or the other. Basically, they argued that they're not sure that this is their fight. There's obviously some politics behind that. They did agree to meet with us again after we had completed the survey, so we'll have another opportunity to have a discussion. And we're going to meet with them again and try and take it from there to see, what kind of better information or impetus what we can get from them.
Chief? Justice Hull, if I can add to what Kurt has indicated, in our monthly meetings with the Department of Finance, and we just had one at the tail end of last week, this was one of the issues that we also put on the table with the Department of Finance, because it's as a result of the realignment efforts that have taken place over the last couple of years. And we did that so that they're fully aware of the fact that we have a significant issue in our branch. However, we no longer have control over this issue, but they do. So they've agreed to continue the discussions with us as well to try to identify a solution, because at some point you will have, or not even at some point, but probably sooner than later, there are risk factors here as it relates to court security, whether it's a new facility or increased costs that the courts have no ability to pay for as it relates to security. So they're fully aware now. We had a really good discussion about some of those liabilities, and that's not something that I think they want to be responsible for either. Judge Rosenberg?
The genesis of this dilemma, and it truly is a dilemma, is with the other branches, executive and legislative branch. We have tried over the years to convert the trial courts from a county-funded system to a state-funded system. And we've, in all sorts of ways, have moved in that direction. And in this one area, we have moved in a different direction. It's completely illogical. And Justice Hull raised the ultimate dilemma that may occur, and that is you may have, I mean, in many jurisdictions, the sheriffs are quite involved, and they like to get this funding for all sorts of reasons, but you may have a sheriff that doesn't wish to pursue this in any way, and a trial court may be powerless to pursue it, and if you don't have the security, you really can't operate the court. So the legislative branch and the executive branch have created a situation that may really backfire on us. I think your proposal, your logic in having the sheriffs fight this fight makes sense, but we have to have an escape valve for courts where the sheriffs aren't fighting the fight.
Let me also say this security funding for current courts, not the new courts, that used to be a battle that council dealt with every year, because the cost of security funding when it was in the branch was one of the fastest growing cost items that the branch faced. I know Justice Huffman could deliver a 15-minute speech on the fights over the increasing cost of security and the court going to the legislature and the executive branch asking for additional funding for the courts and the branch as a whole to meet our security needs. And when I was on the council, we never met the need. We never had enough. And it meant that it came from other programs. So when it was realigned and we didn't have a say in court security being backed out of our budget and being given to the sheriffs, we anticipated these problems, but we were powerless. We weren't at the table when it was decided that court security should be backed out of the judicial branch budget. We also felt a sigh of relief because now we weren't dealing with it statewide, but it's come back to haunt us in the situation that we've described now. And it also is now the new aspect of funding for new facilities, given the reductions to the construction fund and all of our funds across the board with how we can address security funding. So I hate to say it, but it's going to be a recurring problem for us. We need a legislative and executive branch fix on it somehow. Otherwise, we're going to be jeopardizing the people who come to the courts.
So, Chief, there was one other aspect that was discussed with the Department of Finance on Friday, and that they recognize legitimately that for these three new courthouses that we're talking about, this predated, or the planning for these and the approval of these three courthouses predated realignment completely. So the Department of Finance at least is sympathetic to the fact that, you know, this wasn't like a gotcha that we messed something up. They don't
want that. Chief, just one thing I was going to add, that there is a distinction between the existing facilities, as Kirk pointed out, and the new courthouses. And in those new facilities, I think this is, you know, your question, Justice Hull, is it's not that the sheriff is refusing to provide services that are increased services above the agreement. That's the nature of what it is. They are services that go beyond. But at least the Sheriff's Association has been clear that's our problem, not theirs. And so I think to the extent that we're talking about both in existing facilities and new facilities, that we do have to be on a track that's a little bit different for new facilities, because if it indeed, you know, new facilities have new holding cells, they have control rooms that didn't exist before that are going to require some additional security, some additional bodies. And so those, I think we do need to make sure we're moving forward to ensure that there is increased security in them. And right now, what the courts are, that are coming online, they expect to come online, is seeing if they can cobble this together. But it's not going to work in the long run. And we've got a lot more bigger facilities that are going to be coming on in the next year or two as well. So I think we need to pursue that one clearly with the administration.
Well, may I, Chief? Sean?
Yes.
Does that suggest that we, if we have two different situations here, and I appreciate, Kurt, how you explained that we do, I'm not versed enough in budget matters to know the answer to this, but are we faced with a situation where the council may want to propose BCPs in the one situation, but not do so in the other? I don't understand. If the dichotomy you're pointing out is accurate, and I'm sure it is, how do we deal with it?
I think that's right. I think there is a legitimate issue for new facilities. BCP is probably not the right way to do it. Seeking funding for new facilities we should do, and as far as the sheriffs have made clear, we're on our own on that one.
Thank you, Harry.
Chief Judge Brandlin.
Yes, go ahead, Judge Brandlin.
I just wanted to reiterate my comments that were made during my liaison report from the judges in San Diego County. And the concern is twofold. Number one is this isn't something that we're going to want to expend our political capital on. But secondly, if we submit a BCP under any of these scenarios, I'm going to assume that that budget change proposal, if approved, would provide specific revenue to the judicial branch for security-related issues.
No.
And then I guess my question becomes, in the future, doesn't that also suggest a responsibility to continue to fund those amounts, and those amounts every year are going to be increasing, which is our experience in the past? Then we're going to be in a position where we only have control over a portion of the puzzle. I think that maybe the best remedy here is to work with CSAC and CSSA and approach the administration and the legislature with some other type of fix rather than doing it as a BCP.
Kurt, you'll answer that?
I think that's right, that we do need to work with them. That's what I say, though. On the existing facilities, the new facilities, they're pretty clear they don't want to work with us on that. They think that's our problem. If you're building facilities you can't staff, that's up to you all. But I think to the extent we're talking about all of our facilities, and as David and his folks have raised, that there's deficits there, then we've got to try and work with them. They haven't committed to it. I mean, this is all a big realignment picture for them. And, you know, is this high enough on their realignment agenda that they actually want to be helpful on it? So I think we've got to make every effort to be there with them, but if they're not going to be there with it, I think we do still need to move forward with a solution of our own. And it wouldn't be to fund us. They'd never go for that. I mean, this would be additional funding for the sheriffs in the security fund. Mm-hmm. Great.
Thank you.
And with that, that concludes the discussion of the trial court issues. Next, we'll be moving on to requests for the administrative office of the courts. And Justice Huffman is here to describe the process and role of the Accountability and Efficiency Committee that did oversee these and look at these BCPs.
Thank you. The role of the A&E is somewhat limited in this area. One of our charges is to review annually any budget change proposals submitted on behalf of the Administrative Office of the Courts. And we have done that. This August 6th, we reviewed the BCPs that you're going to see. I will have Giselle will go through the substance of each of those, but we went through each of those with them. And there's two components of these. The vast bulk of the money would be for the benefit of maintenance, insurance, repair of trial court facilities. There are positions within those BCPs for AOC staff. Our view is that our oversight of the AOC budget process to that extent goes to the question of, is there something that's expanding, contracting, or altering the staffing of the AOC or its functions or activities? And so we looked at the two separately. And we'll comment after this is finished on A&E's recommendations. But the one thing the committee wants to make very clear to the council is we do not take any position on the issue of priorities. We don't have the experience or knowledge, and we don't consider that our role. Our role, rather, is to look at how does this impact the AOC, its staffing, its functions, and to recommend approval or not based upon our analysis. So I'll ask Giselle to go through the substance of these, and then I'll comment.
Just a brief comment, because they weren't only just facilities BCP. So on the 6th, we presented the issues to the committees, and while the lion's share are related to facilities, there were a few other technical issues, of which I'll touch on first. There was one issue that we have to submit to the Department of Finance with respect to the transfer of a staff person from the Fiscal Services Office to support the budgets of the appellate courts. That's one in particular that needs to go to the Department of Finance and included in the budget.
Which is actually the reduction of the staff of the AOC and moving the staff position to the Supreme Court.
And then we'll have Giselle now move on to the next issues regarding facilities.
Thank you, Zlatko. So the first of our proposals is for to augment our facility modification budget. We currently have $50 million in the budget, and this would be an augmentation of $27 million. It would provide major repairs, system lifecycle replacements, and renovation projects in existing court facilities to provide safe and secure facilities. This will provide capital reinvestment resources to maintain the facilities at industry-level standards of 2% of the portfolio value. The next proposal is for facility operations for new court construction. Actually, this one is the... Sorry, I'm out of order. This is for existing facilities. And again, this would be to augment our existing facility maintenance budget, and that is for routine maintenance of trial court facilities, and bring the budget to industry-level standards. We were using the building owners and managers as our base level to support our facilities. This would actually, it will restore the routine maintenance service levels to approximately 71% of the existing budget, or increase it by 71%. It would expand the life cycle of existing infrastructure, reducing the impact on the overburdened facility modification budget that is currently being used to address major repairs and replacements. The third proposal is for new and renovated courthouses. There are 16 facilities in 16 different counties that have been, five of which have been completed and are occupied, and the remaining will open in fiscal year 2013-14 and fiscal year 2014-15. Again, this would just be for providing funding for insurance, utilities, and routine maintenance for those facilities.
So that's just the rest of that last particular one.
The last, the fourth one is, actually, there was the slide before. The fourth one is for property and liability insurance premiums for trial court facilities. This would, currently the state is self-funded, similar to the executive branch, and we have a concern because we know that the state court facilities construction fund and the immediate and critical needs account that provide funding for our facilities are very, they're already compromised and committed to other resources. And we know that the general fund does not have sufficient resources currently to address catastrophic events in our court facilities. So this would provide some insurance for those facilities where we see a great risk. Our other proposal would be a restructuring between our Program 30, which is the AOC, and Program 35, which is the Judicial Branch Facilities Program. This would ensure appropriate utilization of the State Court Facilities Construction Fund and to realize organizational efficiencies. It is a net zero impact. So it would just be a movement of resources and positions between the two programs.
And that concludes the issues regarding facilities. We do have one more issue that Kurt will be discussing regarding the essential services review.
Judge Elias.
I have a question about the facilities. Back to the one about insurance, and it lists just a few counties. I guess I don't really understand. Is this asking?
That was the conclusion of the prior slide that it listed all of this. So there was
okay. So the insurance is for all the counties, not just for those.
So this was it. Yes. Yeah, so
thank
this
you.
Then Solano and then San Joaquin.
Thank you.
Sorry. To abide by the font size requirements for the PowerPoints.
So consistent with Judicial Council Directive Number 44, there is direction that the AOC review all of its activities, projects, programs to ensure the existing resources are properly aligned with the core functions and essential activities. So we're right in the middle of having all the supervisors and managers submit this information that the executive office is in the process of reviewing to do that kind of an analysis. And that will be taking place during the course of the next 2 to 4 weeks. There is the process that we would present these issues to. This was presented to A&E as an informational item, but we will be reporting back to ENP in the month of October on whatever findings we think we've come up with based upon this analysis.
So that concludes the presentation of the AOC-specific issues. We'll,
let me just make a brief comment then. With regard to the facilities proposals that were presented to A&E, we have been informed that the trial court Modification Advisory Committee recommends approval on the substantive issues, and on the issue of staffing, it simply makes common sense. If you were fortunate enough to get the money necessary, you would substantially increase the number of projects that would have to be worked on and the number of staff positions necessary to oversee those projects is reasonably set forth in the BCP. So while if you were lucky enough to get this money, you would increase the AOC staffing. It appears to the A&E committee to be entirely logically related to the increased workload that you would provide for that. And lastly, as to the last item, yes, we did hear about the changes in duties, workloads, and so forth, but we've taken no action. We've asked to have that matter brought back to us at such time as they have a concrete proposal.
Thank you.
Are there any questions before we move to the recommendations?
I have a question.
I have a question. Pretend I'm seated
over there.
On the particular slide that's in front of us now, that additional BCPs may be developed, I heard you talk about the review that the AOC is going through, and it's, I think you said, a 4 to 5 week time period. That seems to me that BCPs are due by September 15th. Do you not anticipate that they won't be for this cycle?
The thought process, we might use the placeholder approach on this particular issue or item also.
And then would it come back before the council for review and approval?
That's the plan, Judge. And if we have the information prior to the finance letter submittal timeline, which is early February, we would ensure that the council has first opportunity to vote on that before we proceed.
You're right. You're absolutely right. Yes, Judge David Yamasaki and Judge O'Malley.
Thank you, Chief. So I had a question regarding the second bulleted item as it relates to appropriation authority from the general fund for transfer to the court facilities trust fund. I guess I can presume that the reason for the additional personnel is tied to new courthouse construction projects. Is that correct?
No, it's tied to the if you increase the maintenance funding so that you by $27 million, for example, so that you could do far more projects. The existing staffing available in the AOC to serve to manage those projects is non-existent. So if you make that substantial increase in the number of projects, then you need the staffing within the AOC to do the management of them.
Thank you. Thank you.
So this is for Zlotko. And on the Juvenile Dependency Council, you're asking for a BCP of $32 million. And how is it that we need the $32 million? I thought that we were within the 103. Was it? Are the draft courts over, or how is that that is over $32 million?
I believe that what was presented at the Budget Advisory Committee was that there are claims at the $137 million level, and we just don't fully fund and reimburse the cost out of the 103.
No. So I'm curious where the claims came from. I mean,
I don't have the detail. I don't know if Kurt maybe can, or if Alan can help out.
As an example, our court, I think, spends about $4 million a year more than we get from the allocation, and it just comes out of the other parts of our budget.
Right.
We're just short that much, and we submit the claim so they know what the total amount we paid, but the amount that's allocated, our share of 103 doesn't cover what we spend, but we're spending it anyway. Because
Diane, can you speak to this?
Thank you. Yes. Judge O'Malley, this year, what we had been able to the prior few years was to, as a result of savings and draft, we're able to make all of the courts whole at the end of the year. But it's now caught up with us. And so it's a combination of factors. It's a combination of increased filings now. LA, which is has, as you know, the largest dependency population, is considerably up, but it's happening throughout the state. And so we have this was the first year that we were not able to cover all of the costs, and the courts had to kick in. And the estimate is also based on the caseload standards while taking into account collections.
Yeah, I know. We were never able to make the caseload standards. I'm the one that tried to get us back to the $103 million within the budget because we always went over, and courts were allowed 3 years to be able to put out for RFPs to get themselves within their budget. And so this, should not be happening. I mean, courts need to get themselves within their operational budgets, and I get it, but we worked for years working with, you know, strategies, systems to get everybody back to the 103 because we were always over, and it was a trial court budget working group that's now something else, but we were tired of paying out this fund, and we worked very hard over the course of 3 years to give people time to get themselves within this budget. So I'm saying to the trial court, the new group, get everybody back within this budget.
But Judge O'Malley, I would like that before Councilman Verse speak. The number is also based on the compensation models. It is not based on expenditures. However, it does recognize that there would be a floor, but you're correct.
We don't have enough money to pay for all the work that we do, whether it's juvenile dependency, whether it's civil caseload, criminal caseload. But if we're allotted a certain amount of money, because these funds are going to run dry, we're going to run out, and that's what the trial court budget work group realized way back when. I'm just saying this can and should be within its budget.
Mary Beth Todd and then Alan Carlson.
I don't necessarily disagree with Judge O'Malley. One of the things we identified when these numbers came to the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee was that we have yet another huge equity issue with respect to this funding. And the information that was provided to the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee demonstrate that some courts are at one-tenth of their estimated funding need, while other courts exceed 200%. So I believe that probably means we haven't gotten our arms around working with our means. I don't know how we ask courts that are only at 10% of their estimated funding need to work within their budgets. I think this is an issue in a program that, again, is going to need some looking at, and how do we bring some equity into the program absent new funding or potentially with new funding. But there were some huge inequities within this program. And to ask courts who are at 10% of their estimated funding need means somebody's donating their services in those courts.
Alan?
So we did what we were told. We put out our FPs. We changed the amount of money we pay the lawyers. We have a new system in our juvenile system to keep track. We match their bills against what actually happened in our case management system. We're still spending $4 million more than we're getting because of the volume of cases and the volume of work. I can't just say, well, sorry, we ran out of money. We're not appointing somebody. I can't do that in criminal, and I can't do it in juvenile. We've done all the cutting. We've done the reorganization. We're still spending more than we were allocated. I mean, that's why we need more money statewide.
Justice Huffman.
Chief Justice, if I might put on my Blue Ribbon Commission hat for a minute here, having been on the original draft implementation committee and having worked through this process for, lo, these many years now, the $103 million is utterly artificial. It has no reality to what the cost or the needs are. And Alan Carlson's correct. We take a family into the dependency court, you can't say, oh, bug off, we're not going to appoint an attorney for you. And to the extent that we don't establish any rational approach to this, we then burden the juvenile court that is not able to get its cases through because they can't adequately appear and represent. We keep children in foster care for a vastly longer time and increase the cost and the impact on the court. It has always cost us a bunch more than that. Now, it may be on behalf of the commission, we've always supported an increase in the dependency council budget and rational caseloads, which we've never been able to meet. Now, it may be that in a long term or in a shorter term, we should look at the total of the approach to dependency funding. We have 20 courts in draft. There's more courts that want to join the draft program. The draft has saved a vast amount of money and allowed us to fill in other places. But you are going to have to ask other courts then if they want to change the way they do business. That's a separate set of issues from here. But to say they should live within their $103 million budget is just utterly and totally unrealistic in the responsibility of the court to provide adequate representation to these families and children and to be able to keep the court running. That's why in Orange County, which is a very well-run system where they are squeezing the last nickel out of everything, they cannot meet their caseload within the funds allocated, period. It's just not doable. So on behalf of the commission, to the extent that I have any say in the issue, I would really urge the council to get behind this BCP, and if at the council's wisdom you want to then direct a more global look at this process, it may be time to do that and invite the juvenile courts to get involved in seeing how we can deal with it. There's been a certain amount of territorial issues about who's got how much money and where, but if you're up to addressing it, it's fine. But you can't simply say, live with it. That's just not realistic.
Thank you. Judge Earl.
And I will remind the council that this is one of the items on the list of things to look at in terms of the allocation methodology for the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee in working with CFCC to try to come up with an equitable resolution and also to try to come up with a way to generate more money into the funds.
Thank you.
That was our goal, and that's what we accomplished years ago, and everybody was at the table. And we got an agreement, and I'm just disappointed that it's not being abided to when that's what we agreed upon. And we did talk to everybody about how can we solve this problem, and is it doable? And it was, and now it slipped through the cracks. It's very disappointing.
So we have before us five recommendations. And further questions on the five recommendations or the individuals or discussion is welcomed. Otherwise, I'd be happy to hear a motion. Judge D'Alba.
I just have a comment on recommendation 5B, which is asking us to delegate to the AOC director discretion to make these BCPs maybe in a placeholder, as Kurt Soderlund describes, for new initiatives or new programs without knowing exactly what they are. I don't so much have a problem delegating authority to the director of the AOC, but I think that there should be some approval and scrutiny of any future BCP, at least by E&P, if it's not going to come before the council and sunshine it here before us all.
Go ahead, Kurt Soderlund.
Soderlund, let me give an example, and we'll go back to the 50 judgeships and the facilities analysis. And we've kicked this back and forth in terms of what's the best approach in terms of as we do an assessment of the costs that are specifically going to be associated with facilities and tenant improvements. The debate went back and forth. Do we put in some kind of a plug number so that there's something there with the understanding with the Department of Finance that may be adjusted as time goes by and we get better information on how to refine those estimates, or to say we're going to submit the 50 judgeships for the allotment of the judges themselves and the staff and put in, if you will, just a blank space for the facilities issues. I think we elected to go with the former example, to put in a dollar estimate with the idea that as we get better information, we want to make those adjustments under the purview of the director.
And I would add, given the time frames, we have 3 weeks to complete these, and some of these concepts were just developed or identified last week. So typically what happens is we actually now have to go and do the staff work to calculate that benefit request. And so we didn't walk in here and give you that specific amount. So when we refer to technical adjustments, it would be to make those numbers real, not that we would create brand new BCPs broadly from the authority that is identified here, but rather so that we can actually make the numbers real since we haven't done that yet.
Well, Chief, if I might clarify, my comment was not to technical adjustments or changes as noted in 5C of the recommendation. I was talking about the bullet point that was before us that said new programs and initiatives within, which is now up before us.
That particular?
Develop to address new and ongoing initiatives. And I heard a comment that it would be a placeholder BCP. And all I'm saying is if we're going to do that, delegate it to the director, that's fine, but it should have scrutiny and approval by at least EMP if it's not going to come before the entire council.
So, Judge, if I can address that. For the bullet that's in front of you that talks about new and ongoing initiatives, that definitely is coming not just before EMP but before the entire council.
And A&E.
In October, our hope is to lay out all of the different activities that take place at the AOC, which one should recommendation for which should continue and not. Once the council gives us some direction in October, we will then go back and develop any workload impacts. That, again, will come before the council, before anything is submitted to Department of Finance. I think that bullet that you see in front of you is separate from item B, which would address all of the other BCPs.
And we would also put it through in front of the A&E committee as
exactly.
Well, as they have the first opportunity to comment on any of the issues that come before the council regarding AOC BCPs.
Judge Earle?
Frankly, I have the same concern and maybe confusion that Judge D'Alba has, and that is not so much what's on the slide in front of me, but on the report, on page 3 of the report, where it recommendation 5B says delegate authority to the administrative director to develop budget submissions. Are they budget submissions or BCPs different than the ones we've talked about today?
No.
So maybe I'm concerned about the word develop, and maybe it should be prepare. I think that's my concern, because when you say develop, I think you're going to perhaps come up with new ones that won't have the opportunity to be discussed.
And Judge, I think that's a very valid point. It's a terminology issue, and we could change that to prepare budget change proposals.
Yeah. Consistent with those approved by the council?
Yes. Because
that's what we would
that
do.
Would be more accurate, actually.
Is it also possible to add to that part B that just says that when it's done, that will be submitted to A&E? It could go by a letter. Won't hold anything up, but at least somebody will have it.
Certainly for those that are AOC-related. And
right. Could we add that to modify B when you change the word develop to the other word you were going to prepare? But it also say and submit a copy to A&E, if it's not enough time to get to the council.
No, we could provide all the binders, a copy of the binders to all the members of A&E for not only the AOC BCPs, but the trial court, the statewide, and the appellate courts, so that they have the full record of the submission
before they're submitted.
So, can I have a clarification? You know, 5 is a subdivision. 5 says the AOC further recommends that the Judicial Council do A, B, and C. But A, B, and C are all part of 5. And 5A says that approve the submission of budget change proposals to the State Department of Finance, which would communicate funding needs for the Supreme Court, Courts of Appeal, and trial courts as identified in this report. Are not B and C related to that sentence in terms of those BCPs that relate to those courts, or are we talking about adding the AOC to this as well? I mean, I read this as one cohesive, relevant paragraph, not independent sentences under B and C, since they come as a subdivision of A under 5. So the question is, are we talking about the AOC as well under 5? Because it's talking about, in A, the Supreme Court, Courts of Appeal, and trial courts.
Yeah, but because 4 is related to A&E recommends the council related to the AOC, it's sort of assumed in 4A and B that the AOC issues are dealt with there.
Yes.
But if we want a number 6,
about 5 now.
If we want to add a 6, that is just global, that says that completed BCPs before all of the branch entities are submitted to A&E, that would be a catch-all for everything.
Did you say the global? Well, A&E's charge is to oversee the AOC's expenditures and the AOC's growth or change and compensation package. If we give that to A&E now, we're changing their charge to also review the Supreme Court and the Court of Appeal and the trial courts?
No. What I was saying, I think there was a request that EMP, and maybe I had it wrong.
EMP would be wonderful.
It should be EMP.
Chief, we can, for all judicial branch budget change proposals that are prepared, share them with EMP prior to submittal.
Yeah. I got my letters flipped. I'm sorry.
And this is Justice Miller. EMP is willing to take that on, right? EMP members?
And A&E is willing to yield that, trust me.
Justice Miller, the EMP members are nodding their heads here in the chamber. I won't tell you which way.
Judge Earl, so can I? I would like to make a motion to amend recommendation 5B to redelegate authority to the administrative director of the courts to prepare budget submissions to the State Department of Finance consistent with BCPs approved by the Judicial Council.
Mm-hmm. So the only question I have about that, Judge Earl, is I thought I heard that there were some time limitations, and I thought others said they could delegate that to ENP. Is that a concern, Paco?
No, it's a matter, I think we would submit them prior to the submission to the Department of Finance. We have to review them and get them prepared. So, I don't think that's an issue.
Okay, fine. Okay, then I'm okay with that.
Yeah, Justice Miller, this is Jody. They are due September the 13th.
Correct.
So this
Friday
would all happen between now and then.
Okay.
I'll second.
So has there been a second on the motion?
I'll second that motion.
Judge Jacobson seconds the motion. On the motion to amend 5 subdivision B, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
I am opposed to the $32 million.
That's a different.
This is.
That'll be relevant, I think, to the next motion. Okay. So the amendment passes unanimously. Now we face the question of all of the recommendations, 1 through 5, as amended. Is there a motion?
I think we've added 6, though.
No.
I'd make a motion to adopt 5 recommendations with the modification.
Is there a second by Judge So? Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 All opposed?
Again, I accept the $32 million on the juvenile detention.
So noted. Motion carries. Thank you.